The second part of my conversation with Martha McSally is a bit more philosophical. We talk about courage and how to build it, about the importance of your wingman and what that metaphor means for all of us, and the importance of continual learning and growth. And what's up for Martha 3.0, as she calls this period of her life? Listen in and find out. You know, one of the other things you talk about is trust, and that you have to trust your wingman and your wingman has to trust you. How do you develop trust in a culture that is not trusting?
You mean the DC culture or just culture in general? Like we're
DC, military, in general, all of it.
The context, kind of go back to flying. So we fly, I'm flying in the A-10, single seat, but we don't fly solo. You always fly with a wingman. And this whole idea of a wingman, I think, is a great metaphor for life in general. And I share that in Dare to Fly, that you've got to find your wingman. You got to trust your wingman and you've got to be a trusted wingman. And what does that mean? Let me explain in flying. So I could be flying with the most inexperienced, brand new lieutenant, just made it through training, just has 6 months of flying in the A-10, and they are trusted to only be a wingman. They can't be a flight lead. They're only a wingman. And everybody understands their roles. You eventually, over time, you go through a program to get checked out and certified as a flight lead. And the flight lead is the one who's doing the mission planning, the navigating, the communicating with the guys on the ground. We're often in Afghanistan, we would take off with literally maps of everywhere in Afghanistan, because we may take off on a certain mission and we may get diverted because Americans are under fire and they need our help right now. And we would be given a call sign, a radio frequency, and a grid coordinate. And they would just say, go help them. And so the flight lead, when we'd show up, is trying to sort out from the air, and I'm using my hands here, your listeners can't see it, but from the air, what's going on the ground. Picture the guys on the ground, sometimes in a very close moving firefight, the risk of friendly fire is high if we hit the wrong thing when they're close like that. So figuring out where's the good guys, where's the bad guys, all under tremendous stress when lives are on the line, is really important. So the flight lead, as I'm the flight lead, I'm looking out the window. I'm like, you know, the window at the cockpit, you know, I'm looking at my maps. I'm trying to see, you know, where the references are and ensure we are talking about the same thing. Sometimes no kidding. I've had a guy on the ground in the most complex circumstances. We have the amazing technology, but he pulled out a pocket mirror and he flashed the sun into my eyes and said, here I am, don't hit me. The enemy is north of me. That's simple. So I'm doing that. So now if someone is shooting at me, I'm not focused on that because I'm focused on figuring out situational awareness. My wingmen, their job is to look out for threats and to make sure that they keep me safe. So if I'm about to fly into the wall of a canyon because I'm looking inside my cockpit, or if I'm getting shot at where a missile or you know, gunfire is coming at me, it's their job to be looking out for that. So they better not be looking at their map. They better not be trying to figure out, like, follow what I'm even talking about with the guy on the ground. Their job is to look out for threats. Their job is then to communicate them to me. So I could be, you know, a very experienced squadron commander, and I give the wingman the power to tell me, let's say my call sign is, you know, Bulldog 01, break left, flares, missile launch south. And like, I give them the power to tell me exactly how to move my jet to stay safe. I give them that. That's like a covenant we have, because their job is to look out for threats and my job is to control the mission. And so that's an analogy for life, I think. You know, who's your wingman? You know, there would be difficult times in my life where I'd be looking like, who are my wingmen in my life that I can trust? You just don't give away trust easily. They have to be trusted people. Now in the military, you know, you have some baseline of trusting others who are willing to also put their lives on the line. In society, I think we've got to be really discerning about who we're trusting to be our wingman. I often try to encourage young people, who they're hanging around with is going to impact the good or bad choices that they're making, especially when they're in a formative time of life, junior high, high school, college. Who are you hanging out with? Who are your wingmen? Who are you listening to? Who are you listening to, you know, on social media? Who's speaking into your life? And if it's not good for you and it's not beneficial and it's not supportive and it's not, you know, helping you deal with, you know, threats or things, like, sometimes you need to get wingmen out of your life who you've mistrusted to be wingmen. and find the right wingmen who are trustworthy, who are going to hold you accountable and going to help you in your journey. And they can be different people in different seasons. And then who are you a wingman to? Who are you called to be a wingman to? Whether it's a friend, a neighbor, a younger person, somebody in your profession. I mean, you only know to take on that role, but don't sit on the sidelines. It's so important. And I think wingmen are furry too. We were talking about this before, I could have a furry wingman and my beloved golden retriever. Obviously he's not speaking wisdom into my life, but it's unconditional love. And they can bring you such joy. And that impacts your mentality, and it impacts your perspective on things. So be a good wingman and find trusted wingmen.
One of the other themes I think that comes out of your book and your life is perseverance.
Yeah, it's again, not necessarily by choice, but I am an endurance athlete. I discovered I'm not necessarily very talented as an athlete, but I have mental toughness, and I started doing longer and longer and longer athletic events because I thought eventually people will give up and I'll prevail. So it's not, necessarily physical strength, or talent. It's just grit and the ability to persevere. And I think that's a metaphor for many of the challenges I've had in my life as well, is don't give up, don't quit. You never know when circumstances are going to change. If you feel strongly about something, like when I was fighting the burqa policy, or when I had a dream to become a fighter pilot, don't give up. Now that doesn't mean every single day is kind of a grinding way to try and make it happen. Sometimes that includes resting in the calling that you have, even if it's not where you want to be, but being open and agile that what other directions can I take? What other allies can help me? What other path can there be for me to meet this goal? And being light on your feet and creative and open, also growing as a person, and but not giving up. Don't give up. And so, I think sometimes I took harder paths, maybe. I don't know. I try to look forward, not back. But I just wasn't going to give up. And so that's, I think, a lesson in life for others as well. Sometimes all you can see is the obstacles, and you see the barriers, and you just can't see a path to whatever you feel is your dream or your calling or your mission or whatever that is. But don't give up, because you never know. Tomorrow you may wake up and some new circumstances happen, or a new wingman comes into your life, or a new idea, or a new path, or the barrier comes down, or it gets blown up somehow. I mean, metaphorically, but and the next thing you know, like, if you're not ready, if you've already kind of given up in your spirit, you don't even see that new opportunity. But if you're ready and you're agile and you're open, then you just never know when you're going to have that opportunity. I mean, when I got that phone call from the Pentagon saying we're changing the policy and we're opening fighters to women and you're one of the first we've selected, I never would have imagined that. I was flying T-37s in Del Rio, Texas, having, pedestrians, we're trying to turn pedestrians into pilots was our joke, as an instructor pilot, these young people are throwing up on me and they're trying to kill me on any given day and they're flying. And it was not, it was a very arduous, important mission, but I never would have imagined that all of a sudden it was going to change. And so just that encouragement to your listeners to keep the dream, to keep persevering. Sometimes you keep banging your head against the wall thinking this is the only way, but you always have to be open to look at there may be other ways. Maybe you can hop over the wall or go under the wall, or there's a new person who's going to help you go around the wall. So always trying to be, don't just keep banging your head against the wall. Look for other paths that may come your way to achieve your mission.
I think one of my favorite sayings that you have is do things afraid, which speaks to courage and to building courage.
Yes. I think that, again, a lot of people look at people like me or others who have served in the military. I've flown the A-10 in combat 325 hours, deployed 6 times to the Middle East and Afghanistan. And a lot of people maybe look at us and think we were just born courageous, and we're not. Like when I'm giving speeches, I often do show a picture of me as a little girl. Like, does that look like a courageous little girl? Like, I'm sitting there with my little dress on, a little bow in my hair. How did I learn how to build that courage? I use an analogy of an athlete. Like, if anybody is listening who's, you know, tried to run, or, you know, to increase their health and their fitness, the first time you do it, it doesn't feel good, right? First time you do it, you got to choose to put your shoes on. You got to choose to get out there. Your legs hurt, your lungs hurt. You're wondering, you know, if you're going to make it. But if you do it, if you put those shoes on and you go, then the next day or the day after, it starts to feel, you know, you start building muscle memory and strength. I think it's the same thing with courage. We can either get trapped in a pattern of letting fear have power over us. And we all probably know people, or maybe some of your listeners have, you know, been in this pattern where they feel anxiety, they feel fear, they know that what that feels like, and they then don't step out to the thing that they really want to do because the fear, you know, they is given power. Courage is not the absence of fear. It's choosing to do things afraid. It's a choice. In the midst of feeling that fear, like that first day when I was cleared for takeoff in the A-10, or the first day I flew into a combat zone, or when I got on the airplane with my combat boots and bras, right, to go off to the Air Force Academy, I was afraid. And I think of some other choices even earlier in my life where I didn't give into the fear. And then when you choose to do things afraid, you then build your courage. Like an athlete, you build your courage. So now when you have that familiar feeling, which we all have, your heart's beating, you maybe feel a little nauseous, your mouth's a little dry. And I'm not talking about like fight or flight, like legitimate danger. Okay. Don't say Martha McSally told me to, you know, run into danger. I'm talking about the irrational fear that we have that holds us back, right? The fear of, you know, the unknown, fear of failure, fear of even some physical fears we may have, whatever that is for the listeners. When you choose to do things afraid, it builds your confidence, it builds your courage. So the next time you have that feeling, you go, I know what that feels like. I know I can do it. The fear doesn't have power over me. And then you get stronger and stronger. And then courage becomes a pattern.
Well, there's fear of social acceptance too, which for a lot of people is huge.
It's huge. Yes, especially in this day and age where people are spending way too much energy scrolling through social media platforms and trying to create images of themselves. I see this with young people in my family as well, teenagers, the impact on them of, you know, everybody's looking like they're living a perfect life there. I tell people all the time, you gotta run your own race. You gotta live your own life. And by the way, like, they're not thinking about you right now. Let's just be honest, right? Like, these people who you know, I've got some, you know, imaginary, like, what are they gonna say? They're not thinking about you right now. So why are you wasting your energy worrying about that? Just do what you're gonna do. Know where you're going. If somebody is a hater and they're not supporting that, then get them out. You know, they just don't have them in your sphere of influence. You know, they're not your wingman. And just chart your own path. You know, don't be afraid of what people who don't really know you or care about you think. It doesn't matter. I know that's maturity. It comes with maturity, I guess. But especially now with young people, this whole having to create an image, which then is leading, I think, to a lot of depression and anxiety, other things that, you know, kids are dealing with, because it's all about like everybody else looks perfect in their images. It's not true. Like it's just not real. So like, live your life, man. Like, don't waste your time and your energy on that. We only have one life to live, you know. Use today wisely.
What are you most proud of?
Well, commanding an A-10 squadron and taking them into combat and getting them all back home safely, and the lives that we saved on those missions is really the highlight of my life. There's nothing like being a commander. It's hard to even explain to others. It's not like just being a supervisor in any, you know, job you may have. When you take that guide on, they hand you a flag when you take over command. In the military, people's lives are in your hands. Like, you can not only send them into harm's way, and you've got to make sure that they're trained and ready with all the equipment and everything they need in order to do the, you know, to have the best opportunity to survive when there's people trying to kill you. I mean, this is a, you know, legitimate, dangerous mission we have. You know, we also can, you know, put people in jail and take away their pay. Like, there's a lot of authority that comes with being a commander. It's very all encompassing because of the importance of that mission. And so when I was given that opportunity, and the covenant that is between you and those in your command, it was just such an honor, like no other. And to be able to take them to combat, to save so many American lives and to get everybody home safely, just extremely honored and proud of the opportunities that we had as a team and the missions that we accomplished. When under my command, our squadron won the David Schilling Award for the Air Force Association for the best contribution to national defense that year. I'm just like super proud of everybody. And that includes the pilots and the mechanics and everybody who was associated with everything related to that mission. Everybody was a part of making that mission happen and making sure that Americans were saved on the battlefield and able to get home to their families and live to fight another day.
One last question. What was your call sign?
I had several of them throughout the course of my time in the military. Some of them were pretty funny. So the latter one for my latter years was Wedge. And it was based on the wedge theory of in the military. If you're ever open your mouth and highlight yourself with the leadership, just hang on. Someone's going to wedge you out shortly. And I was always saying out loud what everybody else was thinking, and they'd be, you know, someone who would be controversial. I'm a change agent. And so when I obviously took on this Burka battle, people were like, that's the ultimate wedge. You just wedged everybody out. Like nobody's going to be able to wedge you out there for a while. So, but I had some other funny ones. Like I melted down a starter one time, like molten metal flying out the back. So they were calling me Patty Melt for a while. And I share this story in my book. I'm not proud of it. Part of the, you know, becoming one of the guys and just trying to blend in. Like I was going to outfly, outshoot, you know, out drink beer, out, you know, swear, out everything then at the time. You know, I just think I was in my, you know, 20s as a captain, just trying to blend in. Well, I decided to chew tobacco because a lot of them chew tobacco. And so I was, no kidding, dipping. I think back and I was like, oh my gosh. And so they were calling me Little Dipper for a while. But then I realized I met somebody one time who said, oh, Martha McSally, you're that A-10 chick who dips. And I remember thinking, you know, after all I've tried to do in my life, you know, after all the opportunities I've had and trying to serve and make a difference, if I die tomorrow, is that how I'm going to be remembered, you know, at my memorial service? That's that A-10 chick who dips. So I decided that I needed to put that in my past and, you know, and get myself a little bit back into balance there. But it's a funny, you know, it's a funny story of a funny period. You think about when we were first integrating women as women into these squadrons. I mean, we would go to the officers club on Friday night, and I mean, it was like we were a zoo animal. Everybody was looking at us like, you know, there she is, you know, there's the one woman. And it was just a bit of a, you know, a challenging time where there was a lot of pressure, a lot of dynamics going on. So I was like, oh yeah, I just, you know, put a dip in my mouth and make everybody laugh. And what the heck is she doing over there? So it was a silly part of who I am, but that's the journey.
What's next for you?
Well, I'm in Martha 3.0 right now. You know, after 35 years of grinding service to others, first 26 years in the military and then 9 years of political combat. So this season for me is about bringing my experience and expertise into the private sector. I'm doing a lot of speaking engagements, like keynote speeches and things, trying to get some of these messages out that we've talked about today to encourage others on their journey in their lives and in their callings. Helping out a number of businesses. I'm on a couple of boards of directors for three private companies. And again, bringing my expertise in leadership and in security issues and cybersecurity and, you know, management and other things into the private sector. It's been great. I'm growing and learning a lot. And I have more freedom for other elements in life than I've had in a very long time. And so I keep, you know, pushing myself to do things afraid. Pat, I just did this crazy, epic, a couple of weeks ago, 5-day, 4-night, nearly 100-mile solo trek on the Arizona Trail. I have never done anything like this before. I mean, I have a good pattern of not letting fear have power over me. I paraglide in my free time. I do a lot of long distance things, but I have never done anything like that before. I'm trying to do the entire Arizona Trail in chunks, and I was doing it in day hikes. And I just decided to push myself to a level of discomfort and rise to the challenge of putting everything you need in a heavy pack and only bringing what you need. There's a saying in backpacking I've learned in the last few weeks called "We pack our fears." You pack your fears. So it's a fascinating. I might write a blog about that. You know, you pack your fears. And learning from others who have done long distance treks like this, but like, you know, sleeping outside, dealing with the wildlife, you know, figuring out your nutrition. Like, this is stuff I've never done anything like this before, and it was an amazing, epic adventure. And I'm just constantly, you know, wanting to continue to grow as a human and keep pushing myself and challenge myself. And I definitely did that a couple weeks ago.
Thank you for joining us today. I hope you found something in today's podcast that inspires you along your own life's path, because sometimes a bump in the road is actually a portal into a more conscious and meaningful life. You can subscribe to our free podcast at www.bumpintheroad.us or become a premium member to hear the full conversation. Just go to www.bumpintheroad.us for more information and to sign up.